You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, let's start talking money.
What's up, y'all? My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's 3 o'clock, and that means it is time for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. I'm so excited, very humbled to have my next guest join me. Her name is Fatima Goss Graves. She is a nationally recognized leader in the fight for gender justice and an expert in law, policy, and culture change. She is the president and CEO of the National Women's Law Center and a co-founder of the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. We've been talking about all of the ways that workers in this country have not been getting a fair shake. And it's all the more important, or just as important, to talk about how that failure to ensure that workers get a fair shake bears out for women, and especially women of color. So Fatima, welcome. I'm so happy to have you. Can you just start by telling us a bit more about the National Women's Law Center and what kind of work that you and your team do?
So the National Women's Law Center fights for gender justice, and we do it in the courts, we do it in our public policy, and in our society, and we do it really at every level of government. We see ourselves as working to advance the rights of women, girls, of LGBT people. And our work ranges from innovative research to litigation to powerful storytelling to very serious advocacy to change our laws and policies at every level. So people can check out our website at nwlc.org to see all the good work we do. But I'm just so glad to be with you today, well, talking about my favorite issues.
Yes, they are my favorite issues as well. As a woman who worked in white shoe law and on Wall Street, I heard so many times that I wasn't going to get an assignment because I might get married and pregnant. I knew men who were bonused at levels far exceeding mine, though I worked many more hours. Now, those are nice problems to have because I was earning a big fat wage anyways, but certainly I think many women have their own stories to tell, and I appreciate your fidelity, not just to the data analytics, but the storytelling. I have the sense that a lot of folks today think that the gender pay gap is a thing of the past. You know, it's sort of like when Obama got elected, it was like, oh, well, racism isn't a problem anymore. But that is simply not the case. How bad is the gender wage gap in America today?
Yeah, we're not in a post-racial society. And the news flash is, if we have a President Harris, we won't be in a post-gender society either. The truth is that the pay gap is pretty dramatic. And the idea of undervaluing the work that women do, and that is really what's at the heart of the gender pay gap. It happens in nearly every occupation. And unfortunately, for the first time in 20 years, this last round of data show that the wage gap is actually widening. And that backsliding is especially big for Black women and for Latina women in this country.
I'm really sad to say I am not surprised to hear that. What is causing the gap?
So, there are a bunch of different factors that make up the gap. And for many years, people tried to disprove it. They tried to do all these studies to show there wasn't really a pay gap. The good news is people have stopped doing that and really started to laser in on how we fix it. So some of what causes the pay gap is maybe what you talked about, is the fact that women are more likely to be caregivers and they face a real penalty the moment they become parents. And that's been well documented, that the penalty that mothers face, that they make less upon that. And actually, fathers make more, right? They get sort of a pay bump. So that's one of the factors that widens the pay gap. Some of it is that women are more likely to be concentrated in jobs that pay lower wages. They're the overrepresented in minimum wage jobs, underrepresented in many of the highest paid fields. But it is like good old fashioned pay discrimination, paying people less, even though they're doing the same thing, because you can, because there's so much secrecy and you can get away with it. And so all of that mixed up together means that we have a pay gap that's longstanding. But the thing that worries us is that in the aftermath of Roe being overturned, coming out of a pandemic, the fact that it has widened, and that should be an alarm bell for everyone.
An alarm bell that everyone should be heeding as well. I think that the fact that underlying all of this in many ways is just straight up pay discrimination. And frankly, women not being taught to self-advocate, to ask for more, to demand more. And this is, you know, there's lots of statistics that prove that up. But I wanted to lean into, Fatima, the role that race plays in the pay gap and these dynamics that we were talking about. How are women of color faring in our jobs economy as compared to everybody else?
It really is disproportionately worse for many groups of women of color. For Black women who work full-time year-round, when their wages are compared to white men, their wage gap is only 66 cents on the dollar, or they make only 66 cents on the dollar, which is down from almost 70 cents. So we have seen a big backslide. For Latino women, it's 58 cents. That's the same for Native women. And white women make 80 cents on the dollar. So it's not like we should just be celebrating where white women are in terms of the pay gap either. We're in a place where it also translates to staggering losses over the course of a career. So those cents mean that for Latina women, they lose about $1.2 million over the course of their career.
It really has a direct impact on, again, being able to make sure that your kids do a little bit better than you can. And one of the things, this is just my own editorial here, Fatima, it has always been a source of deep frustration for me as someone who considers herself a feminist, that the majority of the benefit of the gender equity movement going back to the 60s accrued to white women, right? And there wasn't enough focus and advocacy and lifting up of women of color. And we see that in those staggering numbers. I want to shift to asking you about policies that could help shrink the gender pay gap. And folks, if you're just joining us, my special guest is Fatima Goss-Graves, a nationally recognized leader in the fight for gender justice and an expert in law, policy, and culture change. She's the president and CEO of the National Women's Law Center, which fights for gender justice in the courts and in public policy. You can find out more about what they do at nwlc.org. Fatima, what are some of the solutions?
So first, we have to make sure that women's wages go up. It is a big deal that women make up about two-thirds of those in the lowest paid. And the minimum wage has not been raised in nearly 20 years. And for tipped workers, they haven't seen a boost in far, far longer. So raising the threshold would go a long way. The other thing is we got to make it more possible for women to do actually what they're already doing already, but taking a hit, which is both work and engage in care. So investing in high quality, affordable childcare, ensuring there's things like paid leave, ensuring that caregivers don't experience discrimination, protecting against pregnancy discrimination, people who get pregnant on the job and know that right away they're not going to get a promotion, that they might lose their job. We shouldn't still have that as a problem, but it's a problem that women fear constantly, and it shows up in their pay. And then the last thing that I'm just going to name is, look, Women need to ask for more at the job, for sure. They need to demand more. But it is really hard to negotiate your way out of the pay gap, because most of that information lies with employers. We have to increase pay transparency so that the playing field is level. People are less likely to discriminate when there is some sunlight and they know that other folks will know exactly how they're paying.
Yeah, having spent 15 years in government, I respected the heck out of the fact that you could look up the salary of anybody that I worked with, from the lowest paid worker to the highest paid worker. It was all out there in the public. And that does. Transparency always brings a level of accountability. You mentioned childcare and the fact that women overwhelmingly provide the vast majority of, whether it's childcare, elder care, all of this massive care economy. What should we be doing? I know you mentioned a few things from an employer accountability standpoint, but what should we be doing to address really the care crisis in this country? That work goes largely unpaid or grossly underpaid. It's incredible to me.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, our care economy has largely been the invisible and underpaid labor of women. And it's not working anymore. And it's no secret that childcare and also elder care are tremendously expensive. Families can't afford them. And women are most likely the ones that end up sacrificing their careers, their wages, to handle this unacknowledged caregiving for their family. And so we can actually invest in it. We can invest in it like it is the infrastructure that both powers our families and allows them to be stable, but powers our economy too. And we're going to have a big opportunity, I believe, next year, when there is a big tax conversation around what to do as tax cuts expire, how to make the tax code fairer, to also talk about where are we as a country planning to invest. And I just will posit that investing in the care economy, the care that mostly women do, would be transformative for families, for the economy, and for women's pay and dignity.
Couldn't agree with you more. How about a tax credit for women who are taking care of people in their homes or elder care? It's the very least we can do. It is as important as bridges, tunnels, and roads. My special guest this half hour for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money is Fatima Goss Graves, a nationally recognized leader in the fight for gender justice, CEO of the National Women's Law Center, and a co-founder of the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund, which provides legal and media support to individuals who have been subject to workplace sexual harassment. We'll be back with more with Fatima and me, Maggie Dawn, after these important messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Patriotic Millionaires also purchase advertising time on various civic media stations throughout Wisconsin.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're in the 3 o'clock hour, so that means it's Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Really excited to have my guest today joining us. Her name's Fatima Goss Graves. She is the president and CEO of the National Women's Law Center, which fights for gender justice in the courts and in public policy. And she's a co-founder of the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund, which provides legal and media support to individuals who have been subject to workplace sexual harassment. On a personal note, Fatima, I just want to say thank you so much for the work that you do to help close the gender pay gap and advocate for women in the workplace. It means a lot to me as a woman who's experienced sexual harassment and pay discrimination. So thank you on a very personal level. We were talking about the care economy before we went to break, and I hear all the time, especially from conservatives, that we can't afford to make these kinds of investments in the care economy. What's your response to that?
And my response is, I don't see how we can afford to ignore it. Mm. And so we learned during the pandemic exactly how fragile our care economy is. We know what's coming. Every year, more families are having babies. Every year, more people are turning 65. More people are becoming disabled. We have to address this problem before it crashes down on us. And we know that we can raise the money to actually make these investments real by taxing the wealthiest individuals and mega corporations who've had it kind of too good too long at the expense of women and families. And I think people understand that it is unfair for the wealthiest corporations to not pay their fair share while we're relying on underpaying women, largely women of color, or having women try to do it all as our public infrastructure for childcare. So we can make the investments in childcare, in aging care, in paid family and medical leave, in disability care, so that all of us can get what we need and deserve.
Yeah, I'm going to get the exact statistic wrong, but we spend something in the ballpark of like $500 to $600 per child as a society on care. And in other developed westernized countries, it's north of 15,000 per year. I mean, that sort of says it all. It's something that is considered to be too important to not accomplish in so many other countries. And yet we've simply shifted the burden of providing this care or left it with women, again, as you point out, rightly so, largely unpaid. We've talked briefly this half hour about the minimum wage. It's important for people to understand how are women especially impacted by the minimum wage, as well as tipped workers and disabled workers who are exempted from the standard minimum wage?
Yeah, I think most people have not focused on the fact that the federal minimum wage has remained unchanged for almost two decades. Yeah. And that is shocking when you think of the millions of workers, mostly women, disproportionately women of color, who are struggling to support themselves and support their families on what is basically at this point poverty level wages. It's not a minimum wage, it's a poverty wage. Yes. And for those who are in tipped occupations, the fact that they do not have one fair wage, only a handful of states actually ensure that they can have the same minimum wage as other workers is an abomination. And so we need to raise the minimum wage and we need to ensure that tipped workers have one fair wage. I'll just say one more thing about it, and that is there has been so much research that has studied the impact of state and local minimum wage increases. And what they have found is that they consistently boost incomes for workers and their families, and that they don't cost jobs. We are underpaying people for no good reason.
We are underpaying people for no good reason. So says Fatima Goss-Graves, CEO of the National Women's Law Center and co-founder of the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. Hear, hear. Given that you are co-founder of the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund, the last question I wanted to ask you this afternoon, Fatima, is your comments about the incredibly detailed and shocking to some criminal allegations that were levied just this past month against Sean Combs, otherwise known as P. Diddy.
Yeah, it is shocking. And I think people have to sit with the idea that the level of abuse and violence was allowed to be really present and known. You have now have all these people coming forward with what they knew at the time. The music industry really hasn't had their public reckoning. And I think people believe that there are some people who are too powerful for important things to happen. And what I would say is it doesn't matter who you are. If you are facing the most famous person in the world with their billions of dollars, or the person who no one knows their name, but they still abuse what little power they have, We see you, we're connected, and we're going to fight to ensure that all survivors have justice and dignity and healing. And that's what we're going to do in every setting, whether you're famous or not. And I am hopeful that the many people who have been affected will find some measure of justice and healing. And I want to make sure people know we run the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund still, and you can find out information on our website about it, including if you've experienced harassment or violence at work. We can connect you with attorney information and more.
That is Fatima Goss Graves, again, president and CEO of the National Women's Law Center and a co-founder of the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. You can find out more or reach out for help at nwlc.org. Thank you so much. As women, we can stand even in the face of the most wealthy, most powerful men in this country and demand that our rights be respected. Again, my personal thanks to you, Fatima, for all you've done. Folks, we're going to be right back after these important messages here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got Terry Barr telling us what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin this week. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I missed her so much last week, even though we had a great sub, my friend Catherine Lake, but glad to have her back at Civic Media's very own Terry Barr joining us to send us off into the weekend on a positive note with what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. Happy summery weather Friday, Terry. How are you?
Oh, Maggie, you got to reboot that browser. Terry, can you kick us off? What's going on?
Yes. All right. So I have a question for you.
Okay.
Did you know the governor proclaimed October as Arts and Humanities Month?
I did not know that.
Ha ha. This one kind of slides under the door and everyone seems to miss it. It's a big deal because it is the way to connect with community and build on Wisconsin's economy. But now here's the deal. Creative economy in the state is supported by more than 80,000 arts-related jobs. That's a big number for those involved in arts and music and theater. And whatever that job may be, that is considered part of the creative economy. Here's the thing. It also brings in $10 billion, a huge impact. Ooh. That reaches to every part of the state. Here's another one, though. As I was researching this, this was the part that got me. The state arts organization only gets 18 cents per person to support the arts in Wisconsin. That lands Wisconsin at number 49 out of 50 for money going to the arts.
Oof.
Minnesota is number one. Okay, so we said we're giving 18 cents a person in support of the arts. Minnesota gives almost $10 a person to support the arts in the state of Minnesota. So we have some work to do. Here's the good part, though, Maggie and Jess. There's a fairly new organization who is working really hard with all the various arts boards and arts, different in communities and theaters to try to change this and turn this all around. So I talked with Ann Katz I did an interview with her earlier in the week. Anne is the executive director of Create Wisconsin. And here's what she told me in that interview earlier this week.
Everything about the arts is really a great investment for Wisconsin, financially and sort of civically. And so that's our message. You know, we're working very hard right now to spread that message around as we get ready for the state budget season. We're an organization that can't endorse candidates, so we can't do that for the upcoming elections. But we can make the case to decision makers that they should consider the arts as a resource for the state. And we're really gearing up when the budget process will be going on to make the case with the governor and the legislature that this is a great investment for the state.
And again, that's Anne Katz, executive director of this pretty new group, Create Wisconsin. You know, so I asked her, what do we do? Obviously, you heard her say they can't endorse candidates, even though they know which ones support the arts. So she said, tell your local lawmakers, support the arts, that it's good for your community, your people, and the state. And go to a show, because music and art really can bring people together. And isn't that something we've been talking a lot about these days, Maggie and Jeff?
Thanks so much, Terry. I love this story, and I'm so happy that someone like Anne is stepping up to help advocate for the arts. We talk about sports a lot. I certainly talk about sports a lot on the show, and that can bring people together as well. But the arts especially do. Now, as is our want here when we do What's Good Local and Overlooked in Wisconsin with Terry Barr on Fridays, I have a little story in response to your story, which is,
I look forward to it.
I don't know if I've shared this on the air, but I when started playing the violin when I was a really little kid. My mom saw a kid walking around with a violin case, said, "What's that?" And she signed me up for group violin lessons through Milwaukee Public Schools. And I ended up playing the violin throughout my childhood and into young adulthood. I still will pick up the old fiddle and saw away from time to time for a friend's wedding or at the passing of a loved one. And I wanted to just say this in response to this important story, which is people have asked me at various points in time throughout my life, What did that have an impact on you? Do you think it helped you? And I can honestly say this. I think playing music and meeting different people and that involvement, the playing of the music itself actually wired my brain differently. It got my brain working in lots of different ways. Whenever I play these days, I get done and I feel like I've been through like a couple hours of incredible good talk therapy. Like my brain just feels exercised in a really incredible way. So just on a neurological level, I think it made me a better thinker. And then secondly, I played a lot of sports. I talk about that a lot on the show. Mm-hmm. And that introduced me to a lot of incredible people and taught me the benefits of team. But I got to meet a completely different group of folks and learn the benefits of a different kind of team as a violinist. And I played Irish music and jazz, and I went to music camp, and I was in orchestras and did strolling stuff and played show tunes. And it was wonderful to be able to have this different group of great friends and experiences. And that, from a social perspective, opened up all different kinds of doors that were just as important and just as valuable for my development as a little person. So I love this. Thank you so much, Terry, for sharing this incredible story.
Oh, yes. I also was involved in music and sports. And, you know, you often hear kids that grew up on a dairy farm, which I did. Oh, you know, that's all they do. Well, my parents really believed in all of these other things as being even more important, and for all the reasons you mentioned. And now there's so many studies out there that show maybe people with Alzheimer's, how they react when they hear music. And it's so good for them. And I have a very good friend. Her daughter has a disability, but when she is in her music group, she is the same as all of them. And that's become her core group of friends, too. So you just never know what the arts and music can do for you, but it does something for sure.
As they say, music is the universal language. I played in a few international groups, and we didn't speak the same language, but we could sit down and play music together. And that all like it just the benefits are limitless for young people, adults, and older folks alike. I'm just going to put in a cheapo plug for two incredible organizations here in the Milwaukee area. I was a member of the Milwaukee Youth Symphony Orchestra, and it was transformational. If you or your child are interested, check out MISO. I've also played over the past few years when I can have some time with the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's Community Orchestra, which has been great, great fun. And the best thing about the Community Orchestra is that the tickets for the shows, which are three times a year, are literally like $10. And it's so much fun. Yeah, there's so many ways to get that arts fix, not just music, but all kinds of different arts fixes. Terry, thanks so much. What else you got for us for what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin this week?
That is my big one. I didn't want to muddy it down by adding too much other directions, because I really wanted you and I to be able to sort of focus on that. But with that mentioned, tomorrow, October 12th, is actually Universal Music Day. And it just is a day where you're supposed to go out, enjoy some music, play some music, even if it just means you throw a record on your record player and listen to some music. Just get that feel of the peace and harmony it brings, not just to you, but maybe to your whole household or your community. And I just love all of this. And that's kind of where I wanted to stay in touch with as we were talking today.
I love it. Folks, I promise you, Terry and I did not plan this out. I did not mean to lay the groundwork for Universal Music Day by saying music is the universal language, but sometimes it just works out like that. There was this great little event. I don't even know if I can call it an event. This was in the middle of COVID, sort of coming out of it. Things were still substantially closed. It was the early spring of 2021. And I happened to be in a spot that had a pegboard up in it, which is great for just, you know, little local happenings and things. And I kid you not, Terry, a mother, a father, and their adult son, they were all, you know, I think the son was maybe about 30 years old, basically gave a free neighborhood concert off their porch on the east side of Milwaukee.
Oh, I love it.
And you brought your like bottle of wine and your friend and some whatever you wanted or your beers and your folding chair, and everybody sat outside and they had it like mic'd up and speakers. And I thought, that is the... You just showed up, and it was real chill. They played all kinds of different music. It was pretty gosh darn amazing. I love things like that. Are you doing anything Are you doing anything special for Universal Music Day?
You know, we listen to music all the time. My husband is a guitar player, so if he's not out and about playing with someone, I will hear very loud guitar out of my basement. But then we are actually going to travel up to Northeast Wisconsin for my little nephew's birthday. He is 11 on October 11th today, and we're going to be celebrating him all weekend. So I'm looking forward to the drive just to see the changing leaves and scenery, but then also just taking in music along the way. Oh, it's just going to be a great weekend. How about you?
I mean, what's a road trip without good tunes? I mean, that's no road trip at all. You got to have the DJ. What am I doing this weekend? I don't even know what the heck is happening tomorrow. Oh, yes, I do. I'm one of those people that until I look at it in my calendar, I don't know that it's happening. I've got a really great friend visiting me from out of town tomorrow. Looking forward to that. I got to hit up the grocery store and restock the supplies for the weekend. I'm running a little low at being the end of the week.
Uh-oh.
and all. Well, I definitely relate, Terry, to your story about your husband playing his guitar in the basement. I used to not like performing in front of people, but it didn't bother me too much. Yeah, I had terrible stage fright. I used to get real sick when I had to do like solo performances and things. But what I didn't mind terribly was practicing in my bedroom in the city with the windows open. That didn't bother me. And there are still
there
some neighbors
that, joyful about that.
Yes, I didn't have to see anybody, so I didn't get nervous about it. I just, you know, practiced away. And I will on occasion.
Now you're on the radio.
And now I'm on the radio. Who knew? I'll run into one of my parents' old neighbors, and they'll say, "Oh yeah, I remember listening to you practice when you were a kid." And then, you know, it brings out a goodly sense of mortification for me. And I hope I always express to them, I hope it wasn't too terrible. But yes.
We have a drummer down the street, and every now and then we can hear him with the windows open. And I love it. I just love it so much. It just makes you smile.
I've got a tuba player in my hood these days, and I love it. It's great. Never knew I was going to be a big tuba fan, but I'm a tuba fan. So whoever lives next to me on the east side of Milwaukee, keep tubaing. I appreciate it. Folks, that's Civic Media's very own Terry Barr. She joins me every Friday for what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. Terry, you have a beautiful weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
You as well.
Folks, we'll be right back. I want to hear about your weekends. We're going to roll into it nice and easy this Friday afternoon here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Sound off, or sound in, if you will. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. More in just a moment. Happy Friday, everybody. These weeks, they may only be 7 days, but they feel like a month. So much going on. I hope that you have time this weekend to take a break from things and breathe. We need to breathe. In and amongst me lighting my hair on fire a few times a week on the show, Jess, I have to remember to breathe.
I hear it does wonders for the continuation of being.
Yeah. The breathing, a little music for Universal Music Day will do me well. I'm really excited because the friend that's joining me this weekend to hang out, haven't seen her in a long time. She is so funny. I invariably end up crying because I'm laughing so gosh darn hard. Folks, if you want to share what you're up to this weekend, the good news that you've got going on, you can join us for this very last segment, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Jess, what are you up to this weekend, my friend?
Oh, I've actually got some good stuff going on. So in not necessarily happy news, but the end of it's happy, Yom Kippur starts at sundown, which is a very, very somber holy day, but it does end with a very joyful looking forward to this fresh new year. And then I actually get to break my fast because it's a fasting holy day at a very close friend's wedding where my husband is the best man. And it's just going to be, I'm very excited to spend this day just celebrating love and being together with our community. So that's where I'll be for Universal Music Day.
Well, you'll be celebrating music and their marriage and the end of your fast for the Day of Atonement. So I'm glad that you've got this wonderful event to look forward to, Jess.
I do. Please what do you have?
Yeah, so I've got the friend coming to visit. I have got brunch with the folks on Sunday morning of, the Wisconsin tradition, brunch with the folks, which I will enjoy. They'll probably visit with me and my little dog, too.
The littlest.
She is the littlest. Her name's Finny. If you haven't seen her on the show, sometimes she pops up onto the screen if you watch us on the U of the Tube. Folks, you can also follow me on Instagram, X, and Facebook. I gotta say, on the X, it's probably where I light my hair on fire the most. You think my hair gets lit on fire on the show? You want to see the unfiltered Maggie Dawn? You got to go to at Maggie Dawn Show on X and see my reactions to the news in real time. Because, yeah, the hair is definitely on fire. But you can also find me on the gram and on Facebook. You can watch my show and the very next show coming up, the Dom Salvia Show, which is fantastic, on the Civic Media channel on YouTube. I did have another little bit of good news that our good friend Todd Albo broke just before we got on the air. He had his former boss, former state Senate Majority Leader and Republican Dale Schultz, that joined him today. If you missed Todd's show, you can go find it at civicmedia.us. And this was Dale Schultz's first interview after he endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris and Governor Tim Walz earlier in the day. So hooray for you, Mr. Dale Schultz, and for Todd Albo. Great interview. I got to listen to a little bit of it. Schultz, who was the majority leader from 04 to 07, he was in the state assembly and Senate for 32 years.
Whoa.
So most people in Wisconsin know Dale Schultz. Mm-hmm. And here's what he had to say to Todd, and I thought this was great. I tell people, look, I didn't leave the Republican Party. The party left me. This is a critically important race, and Donald Trump should never be allowed in the Oval Office again. I'm proudly casting my vote for Vice President Harris and Governor Tim Walz. But here's the thing that I thought was the real nugget of Todd's interview with Dale. Dale Schultz said this: it's going to take my friends and neighbors who entrusted me with their votes for so many years to come out and join me in voting for Vice President Harris. Seeing my good friend, former Republican Iowa County Sheriff Steve Michek, join former Congresswoman Liz Cheney in Ripon in endorsing the vice president by making the point that Donald Trump's actions on January 6th were disqualifying for anyone who truly supports law enforcement and the rule of law. That had a great effect. He also said this: I've seen members of my own family affected by the disgusting lies being told and perpetuated by Trump and MAGA in Florida as a major hurricane hit. And that is when I said, enough's enough. I'm going to stand up and be counted. Hear, hear, former Speaker and Majority Leader Dale Schultz. I mean, that's huh, that
and
is
also
a big deal.
Huzzah.
Yeah, huzzah. One of my favorite all-time statements, absolutely deserving of a big huzzah. Again, that was State Senate Majority Leader Dale Schultz, served in the state assembly and Senate for 32 years, an old school Republican by any measure, a man of integrity who, in his own words, wants to stand up and be counted because Donald Trump is unfit, endorsing Kamala Harris and Tim Walz today. Congratulations to you, Todd, for a great interview. You can find that at civicmedia.us, as well as all of my past episodes, in case you missed anything, including my first interview with historian Heather Cox Richardson on September 27th. My thanks to all my great guests this week, and my thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you all have a great weekend. Breathe. Listen to some tunes, hang out with some friends and family, and relax. We're going to need it. It's a sprint to November 5th. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. Dom Salvia is up next with the Dom Salvia Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.